The headlines: the West Bank city of Nablus becomes a flashpoint of tensions, with Israeli military carrying out a deadly raid into a Palestinian neighborhood. Hezbollah leader says the resistance movement will not allow Israel to even dream of plundering Lebanon's resources. Also in this newscast, Iranian satellite Hayam blasts off aboard a Russian Soyuz rocket out of the Baikonur Cosmodrome in Kazakhstan. Well, welcome to our studios here in the capital, Tehran. This is News. Thanks for joining us. The Israeli military storms a residential area in the West Bank city of Nablus, killing a Palestinian resistance fighter. Ibrahim al-Nabulsi was killed after regime forces surrounded his home and hit it with a rocket. He was a commander of the Al-Aqsa Martyrs Brigades. The raid also triggered an exchange of fire between Israeli troopers and Palestinians. It left two Palestinians dead and scores of others, including a woman, injured. Meanwhile, Palestinian resistance movement Hamas says that Palestinians are united in their fight against Israel until they bring an end to the occupation. The Israeli military has been conducting almost daily raids in the occupied West Bank over the past months. The raids frequently prove deadly to Palestinians who protest Israeli atrocities. Another Palestinian child falls victim to the latest Israeli aggression on the Gaza Strip. A 10-year-old girl has succumbed to her injuries that she sustained during the regime's airstrikes in the besieged Palestinian territory last week. Her death raises the number of Palestinians killed in the Israeli aggression to 46. These include 16 children. Another 360 Palestinians were also injured. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad retaliated against the three-day onslaught, firing hundreds of rockets at Israel. They declared a truce late Sunday. The fighting was triggered by an Israeli strike that assassinated a leader of the Palestinian resistance movement in Gaza on Friday. The Secretary General of Lebanon's Hezbollah resistance movement says that it will not allow Israel to even dream of plundering the nation's resources. Said Hassan Nasrallah warned the regime against miscalculating Lebanon's resolve amid a maritime dispute over Israel's attempt to take control of Karish gas field in the Mediterranean. Nasrallah was addressing hundreds of mourners commemorating Ashura. The Hezbollah chief also said resistance is the only path to the liberation of the Israeli-occupied territories and reaffirmed support for the Palestinian cause. He then slammed as shameful the move by some Arab states to normalize ties with Israel. Nasrallah said that Bahrain is a case in point for oppressing its own Muslim population while welcoming Israeli officials. Millions of Muslims in several countries are marking Ashura, the martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein, the grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. Iraqis converged on Imam Hussein's shrine in the holy city of Karbala to share their grief and to perform mourning rituals. People also gathered in mourning processions in the capital, Baghdad. Mourners also rallied in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, to commemorate the sacrifices of Imam Hussein and his companions on Ashura. The occasion has also been marked in different cities of Canada. The martyrdom anniversary of Imam Hussein was marked in Iran on Monday. Ashura is the 10th day of the Muslim calendar month of Muharram. It's the day when Imam Hussein and 72 of his companions were martyred in the plains of Karbala in modern-day Iraq. They were killed by forces of the tyrannical ruler of the time, Yazid, in 680 AD. Muslims in Austria also came out in large numbers to add their voices of grief to the millions of mourners across the globe. Rob Carter has traveled to Vienna, especially to witness local Muslims honoring the legacy of the martyred grandson of Islam's beloved prophet.
Shia Muslims living across Austria have joined in global commemorations as the Muslim world marks the day of Ashura. Ashura is the emotional peak of the 10 days mourning period to mark the anniversary of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, the grandson of Islam's holy prophet Muhammad. He was slain by the forces of the tyrannical ruler Yazid ibn Muawiyah on the plains of modern-day Iraqi city of Karbala nearly 1,400 years ago.
This historic tragedy was sparked after Imam Hussein led a revolution to depose a corrupt regime of his time headed by tyrant Yazid. Many historians believe that without the Imam's great sacrifice, Islam as we know it could have become totally corrupted.
Today we're also met with a lot of injustice, and that's what Imam Hussein stood against, and that's why it's important to follow him still.
He was trying to bring back the deviated path that Muslims had been taking for quite a long time. But when you look it from a universal scale, you see that that was all for humanity and freedom if we read more deeply about it. It all depends on how much you study about his journey that he took from Medina to Karbala, and then the way he was killed, and that he never submitted, he never gave up, he never gave in to their demands.
He stood for the rights of people and helped them a lot, and yes, that's what I can only spread. If you're against injustice, then you can stand with Imam Hussein.
These scenes of passionate remembrance prove that any hope Hussein's killers had of snuffing out his revolution were a total failure, as Hussein's name continues to ring out across the world, even as far as Europe and beyond. Robert Carter, Vienna.
Like every other Muslim nation in the world, Afghans passionately marked the 10-day mourning ceremonies for the martyrdom of Imam Hussein and his companions. Tasua, which falls on the 9th of Muharram and is devoted to Imam Hussein's half-brother, Abul Fazl al-Abbas, drew hundreds of mourners to one of Kabul's old shrines. Attendees listened to clerics' speeches regarding the Battle of Karbala and beat on their chests.
This year, we are marking Muharram rituals under the rule of the Islamic Emirate of Afghanistan. However, our processions are more crowded, passionate, and prosperous than previous ones. You know that Muharram is not only related to Shias, so we have our Sunni brothers taking part in ceremonies and services shoulder to shoulder with Shias.
We Afghan girls share the grief of Karbala tragedies with Zainab, Imam Ali's daughter. We are all sorrowful on this day and remember the suffering and bravery of our role model, Hazrat Zainab. Today, we live under the flag and our hijab shows that we are her firm followers.
On Ashura, Afghan Muslims shut their businesses and take a day off to pay tribute to Karbala martyrs. They say prayers and hold charity events. This year, despite security threats, they took part in mass mourning ceremonies alongside Taliban officials.
Today is the martyrdom anniversary of great and respected Islamic figure and grandson of the Prophet Muhammad. I offer my condolences to you and all Muslims. Undoubtedly, Imam Hussein sacrificed his life to save Islam. We, the people of Afghanistan, followed Imam Hussein's path through fighting against invasion, arrogance, and oppression. May Allah keep the love of Imam Hussein alive in the hearts of all of us.
Ashura is significantly important in Islamic calendar. Ashura and Imam Hussein's school of thought teach us freedom, bravery, resistance, and Islamic unity. This righteous path will last until doomsday. We Muslims globally are obliged to announce and spread the message of Ashura to all Muslim and non-Muslim people, especially youths.
The commemoration comes as Shia Afghans have been repeatedly targeted in places of worship and schools by terrorist groups, only because of their ethnicity and beliefs. On the 7th and 8th of Muharram this year, two bomb explosions killed and injured more than 30 Shia mourners. Afghanistan has witnessed different social and political changes over the course of centuries. Against the odds, Shia Muslims have been steadfast in remembering the Battle of Karbala and Imam Hussein's martyrdom. Rahmatullah Baghban, Kabul.
Throngs of Londoners marching through the center of the British capital to commemorate Imam Hussein, the grandson of Prophet Muhammad, brutally murdered in the Battle of Karbala 1400 years ago. Similar processions in the rest of the UK and the world to mourn him and his 72 companions killed along with him, among them members of his family. Their crime, standing up to the tyrant of the time, the Caliph Yazid.
It was a tragic incident that happened many years ago, but the moral stand that Imam Hussein took has transcended time and space. Its reverberations felt through generations, and this is proof of it.
Many generations later, men, women, and children flagellate themselves to identify with the suffering of the Prophet's grandson, a man of morals who strived for social justice.
Imam al-Hussein alayhi salam represents all of the martyrs in all the world throughout human history and planetary geography.
For me, he represents justice, bravery, and sacrifice.
And it's not just the mourning that unites the people here. For them, the march is an annual chance to share the legacy of Imam Hussein beyond the borders of their countries of origin. Saeed Purza, London.
An Iranian satellite is launched into orbit by a Russian Soyuz rocket from the Baikonur space station in Kazakhstan. The satellite, dubbed Hayam, is a remote sensing apparatus that will take high-quality pictures for use in environmental and agricultural research and the monitoring of water resources. The Iranian Minister of Communications and Information Technology, Issa Zarepour, says the launch is the beginning of a strategic cooperation between Tehran and Moscow in the field of space. Russia also put an Iranian satellite into space in 2005. Iran says a final agreement in the talks to restore the 2015 nuclear deal must guarantee the rights of the country, as well as the enduring and effective removal of sanctions. Foreign Minister Hossein Amir Abdollahian made the remarks on a phone call with the EU Foreign Policy Chief Joseph Borrell after the latest round of talks in Vienna. The top Iranian diplomat said that Tehran has relayed its views and considerations about EU proposals to resolve outstanding issues. Amir Abdollahian pointed to Iran's constructive initiatives in the talks and underscored its seriousness and determination to achieve a deal. He called on the other sides, the U.S. in particular, to adopt a realistic approach and to refrain from unconstructive stances to pave the way to an agreement. Borrell, for his part, assessed the recent Vienna talks as positive, saying related progress was made. Earlier, Russia's envoy to the talks said the participants now need to decide if the text submitted by the EU is acceptable.
The EU coordinator circulated the final text of the draft decision on restoration of the JCPOA. The participants in the Vienna talks now need to decide if the draft is acceptable for them. In case of no objection, the nuclear deal will be restored.
The U.S. also says it is ready to quickly conclude a deal based on the EU's proposal. Iran says it is too early to talk about a final text and nothing is agreed until everything is agreed. The nuclear deal known as the JCPOA was derailed after the U.S. unilaterally withdrew from it in 2018 and reimposed sanctions on Iran. Indirect talks have been ongoing in Vienna since April of last year for the readmission of the U.S. to the deal and its restoration. Our correspondent in Vienna has interviewed Mohammad Morandi, an advisor to Iran's negotiating team, about the ongoing talks in the Austrian capital aimed at reviving the 2015 nuclear deal. Morandi touched on some of the remaining issues.
The remaining issues are limited, but they're still very important. For example, the IAEA is an important issue. We have to keep in mind that the IAEA Board of Governors is not a technical body. It's a political body, and it's dominated by Western countries. They have an extraordinarily large amount of influence on the board. And we saw that before the previous board meeting, the IAEA chief went to Israel. So it's not a technical body. For Iran, the issue has to be resolved, the issue between Iran and the IAEA, in a meaningful way. There's also the issue of guarantees. Investors who come to Iran or who want to come to Iran have to feel secure. If the Americans, after 2 months, decide to pull out of the deal, for whatever reason, we have bad experiences with the United States. They're not trustworthy. They're not reliable. So what if the Americans sign a deal and then after a couple of months they decide to leave? Those investors who entered the Iranian market during that period, are they safe and secure? The Americans initially said no. They said they're on their own. During these months, a gradual went from 0 to 6 months, then to a year, then to 2 years. Right now, I don't want to talk about the final text, but we have a situation that has to be analyzed and decided, whether it is enough or not. So you have guarantees, you have the issue of the IAEA, you have the issue of sanctions, what sanctions impede the normalization of the Iranian economy. So all of these have to be discussed in Tehran and in other capitals as a package, and then a response given to the other members at the negotiating table.
Taiwan holds live-fire artillery drills amid heightened tensions with China over last week's visit by the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi to the island. Taiwan says the maneuvers were held in its southern region and simulated defense against a military attack. It says a second phase is also scheduled to be staged on Thursday. Taipei says the exercises were pre-planned and are not a response to Beijing. It held its largest ever military exercises around Taiwan last week. The military also announced new war games in the area on Monday. China considers Taiwan as part of its territory and is infuriated by Pelosi's visit to the territory. Beijing had earlier warned Taipei and Washington against the visit. The Japanese port city of Nagasaki marks the 77th anniversary of the U.S. nuclear bombing that razed the city to the ground and killed 74,000 people. Hundreds of people gathered in Nagasaki, Peace Park, to pay tribute to the victims by offering a silent prayer. During the ceremony, Nagasaki's mayor warned that nuclear weapons remain a tangible and present threat. Tomohisa Tao also called for fostering a culture of peace and seeking resolutions through dialogue. Nagasaki was the second city to ever be bombed by a U.S. nuclear weapon. The attack took place on August 9, 1945, 3 days after the U.S. dropped the world's first nuclear bomb on Hiroshima. Former U.S. President Donald Trump says FBI agents have raided his residence in Florida in what he has called an act of prosecutorial misconduct. Trump says his estate at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach came under siege and that the agents even broke into his safe. The former president said America has become corrupt at a level not seen before. The raid is reportedly part of a Justice Department investigation into Trump's removal of official records to his Florida estate while leaving the White House at the end of this term, or his term. The Justice Department and the FBI are yet to comment on the incident. The investigation was launched after U.S. National Archives and Records Administration notified Congress about those documents in February. It said it had recovered about 15 boxes of White House documents from Trump's Florida home, some of which contained classified materials. And that does it for World News. That's bye-bye for now.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio.
Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
Hame ba wujood qudde saratani Israel mukhalifim.
All of us are opposed to the cancer's tumor, Israel.
Wajh mushtarak hame wahdat ummat islami.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
The leader's viewpoint on Imam Hussein's revolution and Ashura. The story didn't just end in the afternoon of Ashura. In fact, since the afternoon of Ashura, a movement has started in history, which is still growing and expanding. It will be the same in the future, too. Imam Hussein alayhi salam did all in his power to proclaim the word of truth and to save the people. These are some of the traits that a person in general can see and show in the Ashura event. The greatness of Zainab al-Kubra movement is reflected in what is left of her sermons. Her unforgettable sermon in Kufa marketplace was not just an ordinary speech. It was not just the personal opinion of an important figure. Her sermon was a great and beautifully worded analysis of the Islamic community's situation at that time. The sermon included the most profound Islamic concepts. See how strong her character was. Her brother, her imam and leader had been martyred in a desert just 2 days before. Her dear ones, her children and many other people had been martyred. She and tens of other women and children were taken captive on the same day. They were paraded in different places. Some of the people who were watching them were cheerful and some were shedding tears. Zainab Salamullah Alaiha suddenly started her great mission in that critical situation.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Zainab al-Kubra, salamullah alayha, is a prominent role model in history and shows the significance of a woman's presence in one of the most important events in human history. Blood gained a victory over the sword on the day of Ashura, and Zainab al-Kubra, salamullah alayha, was the cause of that victory. This was because the forces of righteousness were apparently defeated in a military fight in Karbala. But Zainab al-Kubra's behavior was the factor that turned this apparent defeat into a prominent and decisive victory. That victory was due to the role she played after the day of Ashura. But Zainab al-Kubra, salamullah alayha, is a recent example and does not belong to ancient times. The story of her life is a tangible event. She played a brilliant role, making the enemies who had apparently won the battle and slain all their opponents feel humiliated in their own base. She branded them with permanent disgrace and turned their victory into a defeat.
Allah, I wanna thank you. That you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
Gaza was flashed bright by explosions as Israeli artillery and other weapons targeted what they say were weapons factories and rocket launch sites belonging to the Palestinian Islamic Jihad. Following the latest round of aggression initiated by the Israeli military, an aerial duel was also held as rockets were fired from Gaza towards Israel, some intercepted by the Israeli Iron Dome anti-missile system, yet many penetrated deep inside Israel, reaching as far as Tel Aviv. Earlier, in a televised address, the Israeli Prime Minister said the regime had zero tolerance for attacks from Gaza and that isn't interested in a wider conflict in Gaza but will not shy away from one either. Israel has labeled the latest round of aggression as a preemptive operation. It says it aimed to thwart alleged planned rocket attacks by the Islamic Jihad. The Palestinian Islamic Jihad called the initial Israeli bombardment a declaration of war, firing a barrage of at least 100 rockets into southern Israel. Around 13 people were taken to the hospital with minor injuries. Some reports have, however, indicated that many Israelis were killed in the retaliatory attacks. In response to the Israeli aggression, the Al-Quds brigades launched attacks on cities across the occupied territories. Hamas also announced its support for the Islamic Jihad and said it would respond to the strikes. Israel claims it targets military sites, but similar to all other attacks by the regime, civilians seem to be on the receiving end of the rockets.
Definitely, this is a war crime. It's a war crime in itself. The bombing in itself is a war crime. The siege of Gaza and the blockade for 15 years is a war crime. The starving people, cutting off the electricity and cutting off the water supply and cutting off the ability for Palestinians to import much necessary food and building supplies and medicine and allow people to leave and come back is a war crime in itself. This is not acceptable. And that's one thing. The second aspect of it is that the fact that Israel has claimed and actually publicly announced that it is using this as a preemptive in itself is also a war crime, because even in international law of war, you are supposed to respond in a proportionate manner if you are being attacked. Actually, even this time, Israel itself admitted that there has been no provocation. Israel has been provoking again and again and again, and has been provoking the Palestinians in order to create a war with the Palestinians and in order to punish Palestinians again and again. So Palestinians have not done anything yet, and so Israel went and bombed and killed so many children, so many civilians, has destroyed again Gaza. This is apartheid. This is a crime against humanity.
The United States has time and again vowed to support Israel. This includes the U.S. President's latest trip to Israel, where he pledged full military support for Israel with regard to the Iron Dome, a new laser system, and other military support. And now regarding the latest round of attack against Gaza, the U.S. ambassador to the regime said Israel has a right to defend itself. That is a green light for Israel to continue with its rocket attacks. The U.K. Foreign Secretary also echoed similar remarks, adding that the kingdom stands by Israel.
Biden has continued support for Israel unconditionally. He repeated support for Israel and quote-unquote its security when it is not even threatened. It's the one that's threatening the security of the Palestinian people, including the children, women, elderly people, disabled, everybody. Israel is threatening the security. It's not the other way around. So for the United States to go around and for Joe Biden making so many promises during his campaign against Bush, against Trump, that he was going to roll back many of the aggressive actions of Trump, which were already before Trump, not really happily during Obama as well, and Joe Biden was his vice president. They were actually very problematic against the Palestinians. For Biden not to even reverse the aggressive steps that Trump has taken against the Palestinians, but to continue military aid, economic aid, collaboration with Israel, justification for Israel's attack on, it is giving a green light, and it is exactly the way we all understood it.
Those statements have, however, drawn criticism from the United Nations. The UN Special Reporter on the Occupied Palestinian Territories slammed the U.S. for the remarks and stated that Israel cannot claim that it is defending itself in this conflict. She also condemned the regime's attacks as illegal and irresponsible. Meanwhile, the office of the Palestinian president called this week's attack a dangerous escalation. The regime's attacks was also followed by a closure of two border crossings with the Gaza Strip. But Palestine has witnessed such acts of aggression from time and again, and the heaviest price is always paid by the civilians. The Gaza Strip has been under an Israeli blockade since 2007. That is 15 years of a blockade. Israel has also waged many wars against the Gaza Strip and killed scores of Palestinians, yet there's no mention of this, while Russia's war in Ukraine takes center stage on a daily basis.
A series of drills across six zones surrounding Chinese Taipei. Conventional missile firepower assault in the waters east of Taiwan. More than 100 warplanes, including fighters and bombers, as well as over 10 destroyers and frigates. These are the largest military drills that China has conducted perhaps ever, showing its awesome military might. This level of force displayed in such a manner shows how angry China is at the U.S. and the U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit.
Please enter parliamentary.
Since 1949,
that Taiwan is an integral part of China. And they see that as China has moved from being under the control of imperialist powers to becoming a strong, independent nation, that they intend to exercise sovereignty over all of their historical, geographical range, including Taiwan.
Ironically, the G7 group of countries and the High Representative of the European Union have now issued a statement condemning these exercises, claiming that they threaten the stability of the region. In this instance, the European side has now backed the U.S. when it comes to its stance against China. Is this another Ukraine conflict scenario playing out? China sees this as a provocation, since it is endorsing and encouraging pro-separatists and pro-independence forces on the island.
Chinese made their strikes, probably using our visit as an excuse. Let me close by saying this. The Chinese have tried to isolate Taiwan. They may try to keep Taiwan from visiting or participating in other places, but they will not isolate Taiwan by preventing us to travel there.
China has in the past viewed Chinese Taipei as part of its territory. It has also publicly stated that it may take it by force one day if necessary. This is where the U.S. and now Europe come in. Just like Ukraine, both are warning China against any thoughts of a takeover, which parallels the conflict in Ukraine.
The People's Liberation Army has now declared 7 restricted zones near Taiwan and say that they will extend a range of military exercises through Monday. These provocative actions are a significant escalation.
I think the issue of provoking China is this. The United States does not have, as part of its sort of thinking, that somebody is going to be our equal. Now, we have in the Western Pacific this amazing amount of military. Well, China happens to be there. You know, that's part of the world that they're in. And I think that as time goes on, and they have been very clear about this, that they're not prepared to cede American military hegemony to us in the Western Pacific much longer.
But China is not Ukraine if the military display of China is anything to go by. The U.S. provocations against China and Europe's support come at a dangerous time when the world economy is on the precipice. The U.S. anti-China stance and China's maneuvers are taking place along some of the world's busiest shipping routes. Let's not forget, the global supply of vital semiconductors and electronic equipment produced in East Asia are in this region. Additionally, more than 60% of global maritime trade and more than 22% of the total global trade passes through the South China Sea. Is the U.S. and its European allies willing to risk this?
The war in Ukraine has created massive political and geostrategic shifts in alliances at regional and international levels. The war has now brought back the specter of the Cold War to the global scene. Russia, which is at loggerheads with the United States and its Western allies, says the era of constructive cooperation between Russia and Western countries is irrevocably over. Moscow says the end of the partnership is regardless of the result of the war in Ukraine. Regardless of the duration and outcome of Russia's special military operation in Ukraine, we can already state now that the 30-year era of generally constructive, though not problematic, cooperation with the West is irrevocably over.
Well, in politics, nothing is definite and irreversible, as we well know. Certainly, the situation is deeply affected by the events and the stanch positions of either side, particularly the Western and the Russian side. So in the near future, which means in the forthcoming months, is not envisageable a reversal of the distancing that has been signaled by both Russia and the United States and Europe on the issue of Ukraine.
The Russian official added that the current crisis has provided a unique opportunity to get rid of, quote, residual illusions. He also added that Moscow will use the crisis to go beyond the paradigm of what he described as friendly absorption, which Moscow says has been produced over and over again since 1992. It refers to a climate in which dominant powers following the collapse of the Soviet Union promised Russia to accept it as a member of advanced Western developed nations. It's now a fact that the West and its allies are no longer the hegemon powers at the international stage. Following the war in Ukraine, the West imposed a raft of massive and unprecedented sanctions on Russia in a bid to weaken Moscow or to potentially make its economy collapse. The sanctions have hurt Russia's economy, but did not trigger its collapse. On the contrary, Russia's oil and gas revenues have soared over the past few months.
The Western side, with its approach, is also imposing a set of rules which are based on its own interests, although they pretend these rules to be universal. The rest of the world is instead proposing to identify shared rules which may differ in the practice according to the latitude and the cultural experience of the different societies. So this is the existential clash between the two sides.
It's now Western citizens who are paying higher gas and energy prices. The crisis has indeed negatively affected European and North American nations and their economies. It's now widely believed that the US has failed to create a united global front against Russia. The asymmetry of interests and perspectives between Washington and Moscow is unlikely to change anytime soon.
On this, we have to add the fact that the manufacturing capacity of the world has moved from the West to the East, particularly to the Far East, which is Asia. And this weakens considerably the perspectives of the West in long-term confrontation with the rest of the world.
And the latest spat between the United States and China over Taiwan is likely to further strain the relations between the Western-led bloc and the emerging counter-hegemonic alliance. Under these circumstances, emerging powers like Iran, with its vast energy sources and rising military might, can play a pivotal role in the shifting balances between the East and the West.
Tensions are ratcheting up between the United States and China over U.S. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's visit to Taiwan. Pelosi arrived in Taiwan late on Tuesday despite harsh warnings from China. Pelosi is known for her anti-China stance and is the highest elected U.S. official to visit the island since 1997. China is now furious over the visit and has warned of a harsh response.
Well, first of all, both countries, the United States and China, cannot afford to have a hot war now because November is coming up. In the United States, it's the midterm elections. Both Nancy Pelosi and Biden risk seeing their support slipping away. As for China, November is also coming up, signaling the National People's Congress, which is supposed to confirm the presidency's third term, as well as unveiling a new leadership lineup of the top six or seven leaders of the Standing Committee of the Politburo.
China has now threatened to carry out, quote, targeted military operations in response to the visit. The situation around Chinese Taipei is already tense. China has deployed military hardware there and is conducting massive large-scale drills. The exercises feature J-20 stealth fighter jets and test firing of conventional missiles. Chinese military officials say the military exercises are a, quote, a stern deterrence against the United States over Taiwan and a serious warning for supporters of Taiwan independence. This is while some believe the goal of these exercises is to prepare for the military fight with Taiwan. but some believe the visit has in fact put China in the difficult position of having to show a resolute response while avoiding a full-blown conflict.
China's military exercises have been planned in advance. So there was a live fire military exercises now going on quite near Taiwan, less than 100 miles. And then six zones, military exercise zones, have been identified surrounding the Taiwan island, and with live fire military exercises in all the six regions, in effect blockading the Taiwan island for 3 days, just to show, just to teach Taiwan a lesson and to clear, send a clear signal that China's red line has truly been crossed.
Pelosi's visit to Taiwan has been condemned by China's allies, including Iran and Russia. Moscow says Russia backs China over the Taiwan issue, warning that the provocative trip would put the United States on a collision course with Beijing. Iran says the visit to Taiwan is a turning point in the already tense ties between China and the US and will have reverberations across the world. Iran has also expressed full support for the One China policy. The crisis dates back to the time when the People's Republic of China was created in 1949. After the Communist Party seized power in mainland China in 1949, the US refused to recognize it as a rightful government in China. Back then, the US decided to open its embassy in Taipei. In the 1970s, Washington and Beijing decided to normalize their ties. In 1979, the US formally recognized the communist-run People's Republic of China and cut ties with Taipei. This meant that the United States recognized the People's Republic of China as the only legal government of China. But following that, the US Congress passed the Taiwan Relations Act, which has underpinned the US policy towards Taiwan ever since. The act authorizes de facto diplomatic relations and allows the US government to provide weapons to Taiwan.
The unification of Taiwan is very high up on Beijing's agenda. In fact, President Xi Jinping has made it quite plain that the latest time frame for Taiwan unification is the 2049, which is the 100th anniversary of the founding of the People's Republic of China. But the ideal solution is still peaceful unification. But peaceful unification comes up with the reality that most of the Taiwanese people do not want a unification. But neither do they want independence, because independence would affect their livelihood or threaten their security. All they want is to maintain the status quo forever. But again, this risks that Taiwan will be drifting further and further away from China. So I think that China is likely to adopt a policy in the same way as they China succeeded now in having Hong Kong being united with the motherland.
The US is now the largest arms provider to Taiwan. The Taiwan crisis comes amid shifting geopolitical alliance. The Ukraine crisis has already weakened the hegemonic position of the United States and its allies. It now appears that Washington is trying to provoke another crisis in the East Asia region to reassert its hegemony.
IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
تمام ارزش‌ها و صفاتی که انسان احترام می‌گذاره، همه این ارزش‌ها در علی ابن ابی طالب جمعه.
Human in general, whether a Muslim, non-Muslim, or even a disbeliever, respect the values present in the character of Ali ibn Abi Talib.
لا يقيم أمر الله سبحانه
إلا من لا يصانع ولا يضارع ولا يتبع المطامع.
Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, the reason we love him as our hero, or not only in the material sense, in the spiritual sense, in the leadership sense.
The universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam in To My Brother. Imam Ali alayhi salam, the most distinguished and extraordinary personality in Islam after the Holy Prophet Muhammad. His entire life is a struggle for the advancement of Islam, the universal religion prescribed by Allah for all of humanity. Imam Ali alayhi salam was the living miracle raised up by the Holy Prophet Muhammad himself, and was not only the successor and the executor of the Holy Prophet Muhammad, but as history testifies, he was also a great human being, a brave defender of Islam, a just and fair judge, a generous philanthropist, a champion of the people, and the most pious person of his time. And in today's world, overcome by evil and darkness, and oppression and slavery, and tyranny and falsehood, a quick look into this beacon of truth and justice, a look into the universal persona of Imam Ali, is greatly useful for making and changing our lives, our families, our societies, and our world into the beautiful world that Allah has planned for humanity.
قال أمير المؤمنين علي عليه السلام: خالط الناس مخالطة، إن متم معها بكوا عليكم، وإن عشتم حنوا إليكم.
Imam Ali, peace be upon him, said, "Meet people in such a manner that if you die, they should weep for you, and if you live, they should long for you."
Welcome back, dear friends. It's great to have you with us. This is IRIB English Radio. The program is To My Brother, and we are discussing the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam. Dear friends, when talking about the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam, of course we find that the persona of Imam Ali is something which has transcended and surpassed time and age. We find that the things that Imam Ali said and the behaviors and the actions of Imam Ali alayhi salam are truly a role model for every single age, even in today's present day. In one of Imam Ali alayhi salam's sermons, we find that Imam Ali talks about individuals who sit for the dispensation of justice among the people. Now, he is talking about judges, whether they are religious judges or a-religious judges. But in general, he is talking about those people who sit for the dispensation of justice among people but are not fit for it. Now, each and every single one of us, in one way or the other, is such that we do dispense justice. We don't necessarily have to be a judge in a court of law to be dispensing justice, but in our own little way, in our very different and unique positions of power in our lives, whether it's something as simple as being a older brother and sister or a mother and father, or for example, an individual who has a little bit more power, such as somebody who is the boss in the office. In one way or the other, we are dispensing justice. Here, Imam Ali talks about the qualities of individuals who are dispensing justice, but are not fit for it. It is quite scary, but Imam Ali alayhi salam says, among all the people the most detested before Allah are two people. One of them is one who is devoted to their own self, meaning they only care about themselves, they only care about their own benefit, they only care about their own loss. They are an individual who is selfish. And then Imam Ali continues and he says, so this individual who is devoted to their own self is deviated from the true path, and they love to speak foul innovations, inviting towards the wrong path. Dear friends, we must be very careful in our different positions of power when we are dispensing justice among the people, to make sure that we are not devoted to ourselves. The justice that we are meting out to the people is not based upon our own selfish requirements or our own selfish needs or our own selfish desires and wants. Because this kind of an individual who dispenses justice in whatever position they are in, and they are devoted to their self, then they will be deviated from the true path. They will have gone astray from the true path, and they will begin to invite towards the wrong path. So not only will such an individual lead to their own destruction, but they will also lead to the destruction of other people. So we must be very careful when dispensing and meting out justice among the people. Another profound and thought-provoking lesson brought to us by the universal persona of Imam Ali alayhi salam.
Assalamu alaikum to you, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, the program To My Brother. I'm Atta, the producer of this program. And at this moment, I invite you to listen to the Arabic text of Ziyara Aminullah along with the English translation. Please stay tuned.
Bismillahirrahmanirrahim. اللهم فاستجب دعائي واقبل ثنائي واجمع بيني وبين
O Allah, give favorable answer to my prayer. Acknowledge the praise I sign in worship. Let there be peace and harmony between me and my friends for the sake of Muhammad, Ali, Fatima, Al-Hassan and Al-Hussein. Verily, thou art my benefactor who provides with bounties, the aim of my desires, the ultimate destination of my hopes in my future life and during this short life. Thou art my God, my Master and my Lord. Welcome my friends, keep our enemies away from us. To save us from the evil mischief, divert their attention. Let the true world come out in the open, supreme and dominant. Refute and condemn the fully, rendered contemptible. Verily, thou art able to do all things.
Thank you.
And now we invite you to listen to Sayyid Muhammad Ridhvi.
I just would like to share with you one sentiment or the feeling of a lady who was among the followers of Ahlul Bayt. And this is a lady who is known as Sauda bint Ammara bin al-Ashtar al-Hamdaniya. And she was from the family which believed in Amir al-Mu'mineen, from the Hamdaniya Yemeni family and the tribe. And she was a poetess in her own right. She was talented in composing poetry. And in the Battle of Siffin, interestingly, she was there with her brother. And she played her part in composing lines in order to encourage. Primarily, what we see is that she is addressing her own brother who was there in the army of Amir al-Mu'mineen, you know, to move forward and fight for the cause of Ali. It seems that she was also a very courageous lady. When we see in history, after the Shahadat of Amir al-Mu'mineen, when Muawiyah comes to power, a situation happened in their area in Yemen that the governor sent there was a very cruel person, Ibn Artat, and the people of the tribe basically wanted to send a complaint to Muawiyah about this officer. But they couldn't find anyone more courageous and willing to go and represent them but this lady by the name of Sauda. And so she accepted this task. She went all the way to Damascus and sought the audience with Muawiyah. She was given the permission to go in. But before she comes in, Muawiyah was briefed about her. And of course, he also knew about the lines of poetry that she had against Muawiyah and her and his family. Where after, you know, coming in, after salam and the normal, you know, discussion after greetings, Muawiyah started reciting the lines of poetry that she had composed. And she says, "Aren't you the one who said this? Shammir ka fa'li abika yabna ammar yawma ta'ani wa multaq al-aqran." Where she says, addressing her brother, she says, "Get ready like your father, O son of Ammara, on the day of fight when champions meet. وانصر عليا والحسين ورحته واقصد لهند وابنها بهوان." Support Ali and Hussein and his family, and target Hind, the mother of Muawiyah, and her son with disgrace. إن الإمام أخ النبي محمد علم الهدى ومنارة الإيمان. Because the Imam, the true Imam, is the brother of the Prophet Muhammad, who is the sign, the Imam who is the sign of guidance and the minara, the minaret of Iman. فَقُدِ الْجُيُوشِ وَسِرْ أَمَامَ لِوَائِهِ. So therefore, O my brother, lead the armies of Ali and go ahead of his flag. قُدُمًا بِعَبْيَزِ صَارِمٍ وَسِنَانٍ. March forward with shining sword and arrows.
Dear listeners, we hope you enjoyed this episode of To My Brother. Don't forget to visit our website at parstoday.com. We leave you in Allah's care. Bye for now.